Coming up, it's At the Closing Table, the podcast where Ariel and Ashley talk all things real estate, from local market trends to first-time buyer tips and the stories behind every sold sign. New episodes drop the first Saturday of every month. Catch them all on the Reggae Rocks app or at reggaerockstx.com under the podcast tab. Now, let's head to the closing table.
Hello, this is Ashley Pfeiffer
and Ariel Brooke Stevens,
and you are listening to At the Closing Table with Ariel and Ashley. Thank you guys so much for being with us today, and we have a surprise for y'all. We keep threatening that we're going to have a guest.
Yes, and every time that we talk to you, we talk about how we're not financial planners, we're not attorneys.
We tell y'all that every time.
Every single time. So,
guess what?
We got a financial planner.
Yeah.
Yes.
A real live one.
We are really excited today to have Caleb Clark. He is with Edward Jones, and he has no idea what we're going to talk about, so I'm sure he's a little bit nervous.
Yeah. Which... the surprise is really for Caleb.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Caleb puts out a regular market update, which I like to read because it provides quite a bit of information, so thank you. And I thought that as I was reading it, sent it to Ashley, we both agreed, like, this might be a really good time to have somebody who knows what they're talking about come on, since we don't. Because there's so much that's applicable with the overall financial picture and how that relates to real estate, and how it just relates to all of us. I think there's been an overarching sense of fear, uncertainty. So now's the perfect time to have somebody who actually knows what they're talking about to come out.
And I think last time we talked about, you know, that things were feeling a little bit more optimistic. Yeah. And then between then and now, we've had a war, gas prices have gone up, interest rates have gone up. And I feel like what confidence was out there pretty much has been all retracted, and now we're all back on the fence. You know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, but I'm going to do it at a future date as opposed to right now.
Right.
So we just thought, okay, let's all talk about it. And so we came up with some questions, and we're just going to kind of start. So Caleb, do you want to just kind of start and give us an overview of what we were talking about that we read through?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, Ariel. Thank you, Ashley, for having me. Excited to be here. It's always interesting. It's always exciting. I love what it is that I do, helping people out. And all gears back to money. I've always tell people that money's not important, but it's up there with oxygen. And, you know, it's, there's always something interesting. And I always hear that, like in my career, you know, this time's different. But, you know, looking at, you know, where we are right now, it's no secret. There is obviously a little, geopolitical unrest, a lot taking place as it relates to what's going on in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. And it's created this this fear dynamic, and we'll see if it's temporary. Our view is it is temporary, but overall, we're looking at the economy. We have a lot of conviction why we think things are strong with the U.S. economy moving forward. But just like with anything, market volatility creates opportunity. So, you know,
that's so true.
Oil prices being one that you talk about. You know, we're seeing it right now. Oil prices are coming back up right now. We look at Brent crude back over $100 a barrel. That is concerning. We think it's going to be concerning to certain areas within the economy, certain businesses. Obviously, it has some sort of impact on, you know, you, I, and the millions of other consumers here in the United States. But if you look at the futures market for oil prices by year end, it's projecting that the price of oil is going to be somewhere between 70, 75 a barrel. So we will see. But yeah, definitely some exciting things are happening, taking place, and looking forward to addressing any questions that you may have and want me to go over.
Yeah. So one of the things that I read was with regards to the bond yields and their stabilization. And obviously we know that that directly impacts mortgage rates.
For sure.
So what does that mean for mortgage rates and affordability, and what are we going to see?
Yeah. Yeah. Good question. So a lot of people don't like to talk about the bond market because it's kind of boring. It's supposed to be boring. But I tell people it's probably one of the most, if not the most important market there is, because it has such a direct correlation to every other market. In this case, whether we're talking about, you know, real estate or stocks, but, you know, the bond market is three times the size of the U.S. stock market. It's a very complex market. When you're looking at it right now, it's no secret. There's a lot of headline noise as it relates to the, you know, Federal Reserve and what they're going to be doing. And I always remind people, keep in mind what the Federal Reserve is really trying to accomplish here is twofold, right? Help control inflation within the U.S. economy and keep a tight jobs market. That's really their primary existence. And, you know, with the headline noise, we're looking at a change. Who's going to be at the helm of the Federal Reserve.
And when does that change take place?
Yeah, good question. So looking at Jerome Powell stepping down in a month from now.
Okay.
And eventually the new candidate coming in. And, you know, you look at the central banks and the easing, when they talk about the increasing or the lowering interest rates. At Edward Jones, we believe that we are in a rate cutting. In other words, rates coming down. Mm-hmm. We're not the only ones that believe that. I don't think that's a secret. It's no secret either that with some of the higher inflation numbers predicated on oil coming back higher, that we might not see the first federal rate cut till the second half of 2026. Mm-hmm. But when you talk about the lowering and increasing of interest rates, they're really focusing on everything that's happening with borrowing and front end of the yield curve. Anytime you talk to somebody when it relates to mortgages, they're earmarked towards, you know, 10-year treasury yields are longer.
Right.
Right. And we've seen just in the past couple of days, the yield on the 10-year treasury back up a little bit to 4.3% at today's close. Mortgage rates are still above 6% on average. Mm-hmm. But as the economy continues to slow with economic growth, and just because I say slow economic growth doesn't mean recession or anything like that. I mean, if you look at the size of the U.S. economy, we're just too big. We're too stable of an economy to consistently grow at 3%, 4%, 5% year over year in U.S. GDP growth. So for us to grow and at say 2%, 2.5%, we could see, you know, 10-year treasury long-term yields come down, which could lead to the idea of mortgage rates coming down as well too. So that could help out within the real estate side.
Well, and Ashley and I were talking earlier today. It was very interesting because I'd refer to 2025 as a dumpster fire when it comes to real estate, mostly because it was so, I mean, it was almost non-existent, especially within certain price points. First-time home buyers, they were nowhere to be found.
We lost a lot.
Yes. But then 2026 comes around, and I mean, I have more transactions in the first quarter of 2026 than I had in all of 2025.
Awesome.
It's been fantastic.
Yeah.
I think partly it was because of the hope. You know, the hope of interest rates.
There was all of that consumer confidence. We went in.
Right.
Yeah. And then
they bumped just below 5. Mm-hmm. People were so excited. People really got going. Sellers even got excited, so they put their house on the market. And then I think start of April, we're now seeing it's slowing down a little bit.
Right.
I think that there's a sentiment that buyers are now realizing that interest rates are not going to go down as much as they
not as quickly
wanted
right.
them
as hoped.
Or I mean, we're never going to 4% again. I just don't see it. Do you see that?
Not anytime soon, but I've learned.
I don't want a catastrophe.
Yeah, never say never.
It's true.
Right?
We do not need another catastrophe to get these rates down to that point.
Yeah.
So I think that some people have just realized, okay, fine. It doesn't matter what these are. I need a house. So I'm going to have to go bite the bullet and get a mortgage at, what is it this week? 6.3%.
Yeah.
Somewhere. 6.25%, something like that.
Yeah.
So you do think, or you do feel like interest rates will probably come down second half of this year, which, you know, I feel like at every quarter we say, oh, the next quarter. Well, I mean, we just keep bumping it out, you know,
further
and further. But I mean, I think if we could get the whole war and the confidence back, the war situated be done.
Yeah.
Get the confidence, the consumer confidence back. I mean, and you're right. Maybe that is going to be the second half of this year.
Well, and I think, too, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's
just listening to some people talk about gas prices reached a certain point where it actually does make a big difference in their in their weekly spending and the grocery store, which was already
out of control.
Out of control.
Right.
We all have children. We have to feed them.
Yeah.
Do you have boys? Because we have boys.
Does the four-legged ones count? They eat a lot.
Yeah,
oh, my gosh.
Eat a lot, right?
Four of those.
And their vet bills.
Oh.
Don't even get me started.
But don't get me started.
Starting to listen to people saying, okay, like there's some things happening. Obviously, all of it's pretty much out of our control. You can only control what you spend and you can control what you're doing within your homes.
Right.
But there's so many outside factors that have been playing a role.
Well, that's also to your point, like as we talk on inflation, right? Think of where we come from and the direction we're going, even long term. When you look at 10-year break even. So I know that's just all jargon, but really what that tells us is what inflation for U.S. economy is long term. And all the analysis that I run for my clients with their long-term financial planning is inflation at 2.75%, mm-hmm. right? So getting back to the ultra low levels, never say never, but we don't necessarily foresee that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you go back to just, you know, 3-4 years ago, inflation at, you know, high levels, 6-8%, we don't see that either. Mm-hmm. You know, I talk to folks about the three D's of why long-term interest rates in the United States should continue to be at lower ends. And at 6%, it's really not that high.
Right.
When you think about it, it's just, right. we're coming off of the, you know, still the back of our minds of what happened in 2020 with the COVID-19 pandemic, right? And the fact that, you know, you could refinance a house, you know, at 2.5%, right? So
it's
a great opportunity to leverage. But those three D's, when you talk about, I sell people, it's debt, deficits, and demographics. So it's no secret. I don't care what side of the aisle you're voting on. We do have a debt level issue within the U.S. economy that could lead to some challenges long term, right? The deficit, you know, that's something that we import more than we export. And we've been doing that for many years. Now, there's obviously some things that are happening right now to, you know, help bring, you know, U.S. manufacturing here at home, but we still have a deficit as it relates to the trade. And then demographics, we're an aging society. You look at birth rates, you look at average, you know, ages, we're an aging society. Now, the millennial generation is the largest population. Second in line is baby boomers. They've flipped. It used to be baby boomers, but guess what? As we get older, we tend to do what? Pass away, right? That's just part of it. But when you look at the demographic level, we are an aging society. It's not that that's a problem. But when you think about just as we as consumers, and that's very important because 2/3 of U.S. GDP is based on consumer consumption, these expenditure items, like big ones, like buying a home, that happens when we are older, but it usually happens because what are we doing? We're downsizing, right? Kids are already adults. They're out of the nest, so to speak. So we're mom and dad, we're downsizing, and we're going to start traveling. But those larger expenditures, it happens to the, you know, the early on in our years. So you talk about those first-time home buyers. So those three Ds, debt, deficits, and demographics could lead to inflation not being a big risk long-term, could lead to interest rates not being a big risk long-term. We're just in this short period of time. And the war's been going on for 2 months. But as I mentioned before, oil prices are projected to be at closer to 70, 75 a barrel by the end of the year based on the futures market.
You mentioned the demographic. And nationally, the average of a first-time home buyer is now around 40.
Got a little higher,
That's a lot higher.
And
then the for the national average, the age of a seller is in their 60s. So when you're speaking to people, younger people, 20s, 30s, or whatever, when they're doing their financial planning, is it a different conversation about putting money away for a down payment? I mean, we're also hearing that a lot of people, instead of in their estate planning, instead of they're delaying inheritance. I don't know. I can't remember the phrase that they use where they give it to their kids now versus
the waiting. Yeah, they say gifting now.
Gifting now. Thank you.
It's a gift, Ariel.
Yeah, it really is. So are you seeing a lot of that in your, do you call it a practice? This is a general question.
My business, yeah.
Your business. Okay.
Yeah, it's business practice. Absolutely.
No.
I think practice sounds pretty high up, so we're just going to call it your practice.
I was proud of myself for pulling practice. That one out.
Call it the practice.
But are you, is that what you're seeing as well here?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So with within the clients that I have the opportunity to work with, wonderful folks and business owners, but we're doing a lot of some of that estate planning. That's part of our, you know, value proposition and how we work with folks is that estate planning, making sure that more of your funds passes the way that you want to pass, whether it's talking about, you know, kids or, you know, looking at charities, whatever. But doing so to where there's less going to Uncle Sam, to the IRS and taxes. So yeah, there's a lot of gifting that takes place as it relates to, you know, first time home buyers and the younger generation. We do. In our planning process, you know, we talk about, you know, money that you need today, money you need tomorrow, money you need in the future. And so, you know, that money today or money tomorrow, more in essence, could be that goal of, you know, wanting to buy a house, right? And so, you know, you all are familiar with like FHA loans, right? Where you really need to come out with, what, 3.5% on the down payment? It used to be, what, 10%?
I think there was a time it was like 7.5% to 10%.
7.5% to 10%. So this is happening because what's happened to the value of homes over the years? Well, they've appreciated in value, right? And that's no secret. Now, there are some bills that, you know, some of them passed through the Senate, but it hasn't made it through Congress as a whole. But there are some bills out there that are, you know, trying to get pushed across the table to help out with some of these first-time home buyers. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a challenge when you look at some of these younger generations, when you factor in, you know, student loans and then the value of the homes. And now at interest rates at 6%, it could be a challenge for some.
And childcare.
Yeah.
Have y'all seen that? I saw a statistical little data thing that showed, you know, 10 years ago what it was, like how much you paid for your first house, how much all of that, you know, all the way down to childcare. And when you see what we paid when our kids were little versus what, you know, our kids will pay. I mean, it is, it's great. It's no wonder that they can't afford to buy a house.
And we were talking about the multi-generational living arrangements, which we're starting to see more and more of, where parents are selling the larger house that they've had, purchasing something that allows them to maybe live in the casita.
Yeah, and the kids have the big house.
Kids have the big house so that they can help out with child care. I mean, obviously, we adapt and change as needed.
Yeah.
I was reading something that, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, when interest rates were a lot higher than they are now, people changed their lifestyles in order to save up for the down payments. And nobody's doing that. Nobody wants to change how they live and their comfortable lifestyle.
Ariel was like, you know, maybe we could have $10 Starbucks versus $20 Starbucks a day or whatever. And I said, that's just not the way these kids roll. It's not. Yeah. But I think it's very
instant
interesting.
Instant gratification. We live in a society of instant gratification.
Yes. Yeah. Right. I think it's so interesting, Caleb, how you talked about the baby boomers and how they are passing, and that huge group are not buying all the houses. And then you talked, Ariel, about how now the age of first-time home buyers is 40. So basically we have lost that whole first generation of home buyers, right? The ones that would buy them when they're 23, 24, and then buy their next one at 35 or so,
right?
We've lost that whole, layer or group or whatever that's called.
Well, and I think, too, that there's a different expectation of what a first-time home should look like. And let's be fair, it's very Bernie. And the Hill Country is a very hard market to get into as a first-time home buyer.
Yeah, what are medium house prices? Like $760,000?
In Fredericksburg, I think it was $764,000. In Bernie, it's $600,000+.
Yeah, who buys their first home $600,000?
Not me.
Yeah.
Well, you think about California. Entering California is $900,000 to $1.2
million. Right.
Yeah. So in that market, people are having to make very different decisions financially to help their children. You have a little bit older kids than I do, but, you know, they're going to be done in college in just a blink of an eye. And, I mean,
from your lips to God's ears on that one, thank you very much.
Oof, I feel like I'm already giving away all the inheritance paying for college. But I don't know how we would be able to provide the down payment. I mean, outside of an FHA loan, FHA is genius. But I don't even think the kids can afford the payments.
Right.
So what Ariel and I were talking about this earlier as well, about what I'm seeing is these baby boomers, kind of like what she said, they come in and they're like, okay, we're going to sell our McMansion, right? And then we're going to buy a little acreage and we're going to live in the little house, and then brother's going to build a house, sister's going to build a house, and kind of compound-ish is what it's looking like. And I do those so often, and I was telling Ariel, when we do those, we don't have agents involved and we don't have lenders involved, because what's happening is these baby boomers that have these big houses are getting enough from selling the big house, you know, in the whatever neighborhood and on the whatever to afford a little piece where they don't have the restrictions and can do whatever they want. Now it's harder in Kendall County because we don't have the acreage left, you know, unless you're going far out to the north that doesn't have all the restrictions and whatnot.
Correct.
So this is happening more in Comal, doing some in Fredericksburg, you know, Bandera.
Yeah. I mean, and we're even seeing Esperanza is a great example of a neighborhood that this is happening quite a bit, where you have the 55 plus section, which parents are choosing to get their house in the 55 plus section because their children and grandchildren live in one of the other sections. Granted, that's still at a very different price point.
Right.
When it entry into that is still $650, $700,
correct,
if
yeah.
you will. So
yeah.
I think it's just an interesting time, and I think some of that perpetuates the media doom and gloom. I tell my kids constantly, please don't read those articles, because you're far from needing to be concerned about that. However, when we are talking to people about purchasing homes, or making any real estate decision, frankly, there's an awful lot of fear in the market. And I read once that Warren Buffett said, when everybody's afraid, that's when you should act. And when everybody's moving forward, that's when you should be
being
afraid.
Greedy yeah. when those are fearful, be yes. fearful when those are greedy.
Thank you.
It's interesting. Yes. So University of Michigan puts out the, you mentioned like consumer sentiment. Mm-hmm. So they do it every month, and they put out the consumer sentiment index. It goes all the way back to like 1970, 1975. And it's so real. Whenever consumer sentiment is at its lowest, so as Warren Buffett says, be greedy when those are fearful.
Yeah.
What a great opportunity to take risk or yes. add risk into your overall portfolio.
Well, and moving into that, I mean, are there any emerging opportunities in real estate that investors might be overlooking?
I think that there are. You know, one of the things that's happening right now is the fear within the private real estate space. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say I'm the expert on the subject matter, but some of that
you
will be overblown.
You don't have to be.
Right?
You're not expert. You just say you're not an expert.
But that'd be overblown. But there's definitely opportunity there. You know, real estates and REITs is what we call it in my world is, you know, they're a natural hedge to inflation. They're a great way to generate cash flow within the overall portfolio. But there is definitely some opportunity mm-hmm. as it relates to that space. The thing is just making sure that, you know, everyone's different.
Right.
Right. What might be a good solution for Ariel may not be a great solution for Caleb. So mm-hmm. making sure that you have an idea of, you know, what your needs are, what your wants are, and that you can find those opportunities to support your short-term needs, intermediate-term needs, and long-term needs. But yeah, there's definitely always opportunity.
Well, we've talked about this a lot, that I will say that as an agent, it is delightful to know that my client has a financial planner or has an attorney that they're actively discussing these decisions with, because I'm not a lender either. So
right.
we do the best we can with the information that we have, but you're right. Everybody's situation is so individualized based on their goals and so many different factors, I think everybody should have some sort of financial advice or plan of some sort.
Accountability partner is what I say.
There you go.
We call them team players.
Yeah, absolutely. Who's on your
team? Who's your team?
Right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Surround yourself with people.
Exactly. Well, and we're hearing rumblings because, say, for instance, I mean, obviously, California is always the example we use for just prices are just out of control.
Right.
But for investors, we're starting to see now that the Hill Country is pricing out investors.
Correct.
So why not look in other parts of Texas? Why not look in other parts of the country? Multifamily is a huge money-making endeavor if you can get the right opportunity. And that's not just apartment complexes or, you know, duplexes or things like that, but there's so many options if you can just sit down and take a look at what's going on elsewhere to help you meet your financial goals. House hacking has become a huge thing. I'm not sure mm-hmm. if you have clients who are doing that. I've worked with a couple. I call them young people because I'm old. I don't know how old they are. They just make me feel old. And far, far behind in my financial planning when a 25-year-old's like, yes, I'm buying this for house hacking. And, bravo. But obviously, that's advice I would give my children is to find the duplex. Maybe it needs some work. Live in one side. Fix up the other. Rent it out. Figure out how to start that snowball.
Yeah. I've got a client in New Jersey. That's exactly what he's doing.
Oh, fantastic.
But now he's been in the process of doing that. All right. He was on the bottom floor, renters on the top,
mm-hmm.
did the top floor first, had the renters come in. He's on the bottom, getting the bottom done. And then he just bought another property for him and his fiance to move into. And then he's going to rent both levels.
Yeah. So. It's so smart.
It is so smart. It is.
Where was this when we were in our 20s?
In my 20s, I was just trying to pay the electric bill. We want better for our kids. You know, I mean, literally, I didn't pay my student loans off until I was 32.
Me too.
Yeah. I don't want that for my children.
No. But I read, too, that this upcoming generation is the first generation that will not be as well off as their parents.
Possibly.
Is that true?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't have the crystal ball.
No, I know. Yeah. I ask every year at Christmas for that crystal ball. Yeah.
But I also read that the some of the younger generations are saving more than the older generation.
Yes.
We talked about that right before you got here. Yeah. That my children are so much more financially...
frugal.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I just am so surprised at how
And I think it's just
out.
Because of when you think of, right... You talked about inflation and, you know, you talk about the increase of these prices. They're seeing it. They feel it. And so now it's
and they have the news
embedded
in their ear.
Into them, mm-hmm. right, at a younger age, right, than we were younger. So
I'm cracked up. When my kid's coming, he's going to be 20. He's like, have you seen gas prices?
I mean.
I was like, yes, they're bad here too. Sorry.
So, you know, we keep talking about now's a good time to buy,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like because of the sentiment and the everything that's going on, people are pulling back. And we were just at a ribbon cutting and mm-hmm. we were one of the agents there was like, you know, everybody, all my buyers, I keep telling them now's the time, right? Mm-hmm. Don't wait until everybody else is feeling confident in the market, because then guess what? That's when we have multiple offers. That's when we have, mm-hmm. you know, all the craziness happening. Mm-hmm. Right now's the time.
Yes, because you can get the house you want and a seller's much more negotiable in terms of
because they want to sell, right?
They
now.
Want to sell.
Yeah.
I'm actually seeing more and more people talking about partial liquidation of their retirement accounts in order to use them for down payments.
Mm.
I know. What are your thoughts on that?
Everyone's different. Now you got to think about where is this account held? Are we talking about a qualified account to where now you got to be mindful of the taxes mm-hmm. that are involved with that? Are they at a certain age where they could receive a penalty? So these are the things that I go over in my conversations with clients is mm-hmm. Because we also have to keep in mind it's not necessarily the amount that you're taking out, but what's the net amount that you're going to get when we factor in taxes or penalties?
Yeah.
So we do try to strategize planning to where we can alleviate that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've had clients like, here's a perfect example. Now, different situation. They're going to buy what they're calling their last property.
It's never the last.
Yeah.
It's never.
As soon as they say that, yes, I know I'm going to go ahead and schedule you.
They're in, he's 74, she's 72, so we'll see. But I mean, you know, we strategize planning to where, you know, we're actually looking at doing a line of credit on their account.
Oh.
And based on where their assets are and the line of credit rate, it's a lot cheaper than having to do a construction loan at the bank.
Oh, yeah.
They already have a solution of once they buy the land, build the house, then they're going to sell their house they're in right now, and they can pay back that line of credit. We mm-hmm. can use the investments to help pay it down. So, yeah, there's a lot of strategy and planning that goes involved with that to where we don't necessarily need to immediately sell retirement plan.
Right.
Because as great as real estate is, and all my wealthiest clients do have some form of real estate to their overall portfolio, you know, we do need to make sure that we have that liquidity side too.
Yeah.
And help provide some of that income distribution they may need when they're no longer wanting to work or
right.
health reasons can no longer work.
Right.
So it's very important to have the whole planning.
Well, and we're seeing too, I've had the opportunity to work with an aging population and not even very aging, like just people who are in declining health and have to make real estate decisions, but purchased in 2023. At the height of the market.
Yeah.
And some people don't have any equity.
Yeah.
Depending on how they did it. That's a pretty painful conversation. Because how do you... I have no advice. I probably have no intelligent advice other than you're just going to need to hold on to that house for a little bit longer, because selling it, you're going at a loss. Then the conversation is, can you rent it? You know, all of the things. But there are quite a few people who are in that predicament,
mm-hmm.
Especially that 2023, mid-2023, early 2024 purchase,
mm-hmm.
Looking at needing to sell the property. It's
Well, it got back to what you were talking about earlier about, you know, greed and fear,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Remember how homes were just, you know, getting an offer within 24 hours, right?
Oh, we remember.
No inspection.
Yeah.
Right? That was all exciting. And now people are realizing, well, yeah. maybe I've got too much house
that
I can really afford.
And sadly, more often than not, we're finding people saying, I had to settle for this house because I couldn't find anything else.
Yeah. Right. I can't tell you how many times people came in to close and they were like, you know, we don't really even like this house, yeah. but it's our eighth offer, so we're just going to take it. And I'm like, that makes me feel real good.
Yeah. Yeah. We're also, interest. You talked earlier about the interest rate
right.
conversation. Recently, I had the honor of helping some people decide not to sell their property because... from 2.4 to 6.3.
Yeah,
it didn't make any sense at all.
I agree.
At all.
Yeah. I mean, just letting that be a cash flow property to renters if they want to become landlords.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yes. We'll, you know, let's find ways that we can make this house work for you. Mm-hmm. Because minor tweaks probably is the best option, but...
saving a lot more money long term.
Yes. And there's an awful lot of people in that... category. No.
And we've talked about this too several times about the fact that, you know, statistically every 7 years people sell their house. Well, that's not what's been happening recently because of what happened in, you know, during COVID and all of that. And so we're seeing an increase in refinances and home equities.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, what do you mean somebody's refinancing when the rates are 6? Okay, well, think about it. If they've got, you know, their first lien at, you know, 2.5-3% and they want to build a pool, okay, we leave that first lien in place. We do a second lien to build that pool. They are in the good as opposed to selling this house, like she was saying, and then trying to get, you know, a bigger house, a nicer house. Not only, you know, have prices gone up, but the interest rates. I mean, they financially, it doesn't make any sense. You know, get that second lien, do a refinance, and yes, maybe you're paying 6.5-7% on that, but it's only $150,000. It's not your $700,000
exactly.
loan.
Yeah, exactly. I think so many people are just afraid of debt, and I'm not one to say, hey, become having a lot of debt, but they're afraid of having debt as part of a way to build their wealth, right?
Gosh, if you can leverage your debt, it's an incredible opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, that's the example I use with these clients, right? We're gonna take on some debt. Now it's gonna be short term because we have a strategy in place to take the debt off the table, but we're gonna do so to allow themselves to accomplish their goal, which is buy acreage and build their forever home. And in the meantime, their investments continue to pay in dividends and interest and compounding growth.
Yeah.
So
I had some clients who leveraged the equity in their home for the entire 15 years that they owned the house. They're like, you know, every car was purchased with cash, every kid got their college paid for it, and they just kept using the equity and then paying it back down and using the equity and paying it back down. They were lucky they could do that.
Right.
But, I mean, that's a little bit more complicated of a conversation in how to leverage your debt, but you're right. People are very fearful. I think it's because we've also been in the inflation era of groceries are so high, gas prices are so high. Clothing is high.
Everything is high.
So, yeah, that's why people need a financial planner.
I don't know. I feel like that person that y'all are describing, my face is next to the definition wherever y'all see me. Because I'm telling you, I look back and through the years, Rick Pfeiffer has told me, let's do this, let's do that.
Yes.
And I'm always so scared, right? I'm like, no. What if? What if? And I look back at some of the things he said we should have done. And
oh, my gosh.
I would be sipping Mai Tais in freaking, I don't even know where if I'd have listened to
that. I would
that
not be working if we had invested in real estate like we said we would 20 years ago.
I know.
But we were raising babies and we had no money.
That's what I'm saying. Electric bills.
I know.
But there you
go. But I think a lot of us weren't necessarily raised by parents who were excited about risk either.
No, you're right about that.
Or didn't fully understand it.
Correct. Yeah.
And that's part of it. The fear is the not understanding. Although I kind of halfway understand it and I'm still fearful, so I don't know.
Awesome. What's our next question? Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay, you ask it.
Okay. So what should buyers and sellers be doing differently in today's uncertain but resilient market?
That's
she's like, don't buy $10 Starbucks. That's what you should be doing.
Well, I mean, that's kind of where my mind's going at here. I mean, that's, you know, I tell people all the time, what's the first rule of money? It's pay yourself first.
Yeah.
It really is. And that's something that we as society just we don't do. It's the instant gratification. So I'd much rather get that $20 Starbucks coffee than pay myself first. And so when you look at what should people be doing, well, number one, I think that they need to at least map out a plan based on what their goals are. A lot of people don't do that.
No, because that's not sexy.
It's not.
It doesn't sound very fun.
It's not. Discipline. Not at all. Like, for an example, right, if my goal is, we've all at some point been there, right? If my goal is to lose weight, right, what's the first thing I should probably do? Step up on the scale. How much weight do I know I need to lose if I don't know where I'm at today? And that's all that is. But it's not fun, it's not exciting, and I get it. But that's something that a lot of people should be doing right now with the uncertainties that we feel like we're living in, right?
Yeah.
Like I said, long term, we don't think that this is gonna be a big issue, but definitely you need to find out, okay, where you are right now and where it is you wanna be. And so when you talk about the buying and the selling side within real estate, it's no secret, it's a buyer's market. So what a great opportunity if you're in the right position and you have the ability to step in and negotiate some of these sellers at a lower price point and get your property that you want.
Your dream, I mean,
right?
Some of the dream, some people's dream homes are sitting out there waiting, you know?
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah. I can't believe you brought up diet. That's pretty not sexy.
We talk about diet,
I always like to try to make it very simple, right? I mean, it's pretty bad. We've all been there.
I think it was also Warren Buffett who said investing should be like watching paint dry. Like, you really should take your time. But I think
patience. Patience is the virtue.
Well, yeah, and it's very.
I mean, have you all heard the concept $1 million today versus a penny today? Have you heard that?
No.
Oh my gosh! Well, this
present
is
present value of money. Yeah, I learned that.
Well,
in college.
You got present value of money, but you know. They talk about when you can understand compounding interest, you become the wealthiest person in the world.
The eighth wonder of the world.
Oh.
And so that's where I get excited because there's, you know, we talk about real estate, right? But there's other asset classes out there to invest in. We all know them, right? What are the big five? Big five, very simple. Real estate, stocks, bonds, cash, and commodities. So commodities, you know, talking about gold. Now there's the six coming out there. It's cryptocurrency, right? But those are the five, right? And not to get all spiritual on anybody here, but... You know, the Bible talks about invest your wealth in seven different ships. What is that telling us? Just diversify.
Right?
Because no one has a crystal ball. So that way, when you venture across the seas and one of your ships is sunk through a storm, you're not broke. That's diversification. Right? And so when you think about those five asset classes, depending on what your needs are, is how you go about. So that compounding interest, right? The $1 million today versus a penny today. If you take that penny today and you double that penny just over a 30-day period, that compounds to be worth the value of $5.3 million. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of people, that instant gratification, would rather take that $1 million today than taking that patient approach, that penny today. And that's why Warren Buffett says when you can understand compounding interest, right, you become the wealthiest person.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it still goes back to... the instant gratification and all the things that we're talking about.
Yeah. I'm curious how this looks in 5 years when we have five more years of this generation.
Yeah.
That's uncomfortable with boredom and discipline and savings. I don't know.
It's going to be interesting.
It will definitely
we'll see.
Caleb, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having
this
me.
I feel like
fun.
We could keep going, but
I know.
We're running out of time. And I'm running out of smart questions.
I didn't ask any questions.
I was like, so I didn't have any to begin with because I got them from somewhere else. But no, this is wonderful. And I think it would be fun to pick your brain as we move through this year. Yeah. And
anytime.
Yeah.
Do you want to give like your phone number, your email so that if people have questions for you?
Oh, sure. We can do that. So, you know, I'm based here in Bernie, Texas, right? Right off Bandera Road. My email is caleb.clark@edwardjones.com. And the office number is 830-428-0097. I've got a wonderful team that I work with, Lori Reichholt, Jay-Z Pfeiffer. No relation to Ashley Pfeiffer,
nope.
From my understanding.
We don't spell our names the same.
She spells hers wrong, or do you spell yours wrong?
Jay-Z spells hers wrong. She spells her all the time.
All right. But no, they're great. And if I may, on this plug, I'm pretty excited because we just found out Edward Jones, as a lot of folks may know, and yourselves included, is a large company. It's been around for over 100 years. We got 20,000 financial advisors across the United States and Canada. But our little office here in Bernie, Texas, actually qualified for Momentum And there's only 409 financial advisors nationally that qualified for Momentum. So,
hot dog, Caleb. Congratulations.
We're pretty pumped.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Oh my gosh, that is so exciting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm telling you, you work hard and we appreciate all that you do. And you have events all the time and all of that. I mean, it's fabulous. So, if anybody needs financial advice, where we always tell you we're not financial advisors, now you have one.
Yes. And if anybody wants to get in touch with Caleb but didn't grab all that information, you can DM us on Facebook. We're at The Closing Table on Facebook, at Closing Table on Instagram, and at closingtable@gmail.com.
Yep. Feel free to call us, or you can call the office. So
everybody knows how to find us.
Yes,
we figured that out. Awesome. Well, Caleb, we thank you again for joining us. This was a lot of good information.
It was.
Awesome. Okay.
Thank you.
We'll talk to everybody next time.
Thanks for listening to At the Closing Table with Ariel and Ashley. Make sure to follow us on social media at The Closing Table. And if you want to listen to any of our previous podcasts, open the Reggae Rocks app and click on the podcast tab. Until next time, we'll see you at The Closing Table.